You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Now that the primary election has shaken out the winners from the losers, those winners are instantly turning their attention to the November 6th general election. Let's talk strategies, campaign messaging, and possible running mates. With us now, Matt Marsden, a Republican strategist. He's Director of Public Relations and Government Affairs at Rev6 Data Systems. And Adrian Hemond, a Democratic strategist and the CEO of Grassroots Midwest, a political consulting firm in Lansing. Adrian, what do we know today that we didn't know yesterday?
Well, the vaunted Democratic enthusiasm seems to have materialized last pretty much across the board, including in some areas you wouldn't necessarily expect. More Democrats turned out than Republicans in the primary. Obviously, a lot of work to go to sustain that for the November general election, but that vaunted Democratic enthusiasm seems to be there.
All right. And on from your perspective, Matt.
I think the turnout was substantial. I think that looking at somewhere in the range of 100,000 more votes cast for governor by Democrats than Republicans is fairly significant. I think it's an indication that we're going to have a higher than ever turnout in November. I think that I don't know the exact date, but I believe the turnout model for this primary was since 1970. It hasn't been that high. So 2002, it was 1.7 million. It's upwards of 2 million that participated yesterday. So I think that that's really an indication of people's angst and maybe frustrations.
So given that all kinds of campaign messages have been tried and tested and now we have results. So on the GOP side, Matt, what messages worked and what didn't?
Well, I think that you saw a lot of the candidates that aligned themselves with Trump do very well, from John James to Lena Epstein. However, I would urge great caution in thinking that that same messaging is going to work again for them in November. Mm-hmm. I think that they best be careful to not too closely align themselves. Unless they're planning on trying to recreate what Trump did and build that exact coalition, it could be very dangerous for Republicans to tie themselves to that.
All right, flip over to the Dem side, Adrian. What messages worked and what didn't work so well?
You know, I think a lot of what worked best on the Democratic side was less tied to messaging than it was to tactics. However, what I will say is that, you know, Gretchen Whitmer did a really, really nice job of laying out a message that could appeal across all the various constituency groups in the Democratic Party. She got a slow start with that, but really that full spectrum sort of messaging, talking to pro-choice women, talking to African-American voters in the urban areas, talking to people in the environmental community, really being a broad-based candidate was the right move for her, and it paid off.
And Abdul El-Sayed appeared to be gaining some late momentum. He had the endorsement from Bernie Sanders, but ultimately there was not a progressive wave. So, Adrian, what does it mean going into November for Democrats?
Well, look, Gretchen Whitmer is a very progressive candidate. Maybe this is just me with a get-off-my-lawn moment, but I think it's very funny that we're at a moment where there's a section of folks in the Democratic Party that think that Gretchen Whitmer, of all people, is not progressive enough. Gretchen's pretty progressive. And so I don't read too much into that. I mean, there's certainly a lot of energy on the left wing of the Democratic Party right now, but a lot of those people turned out for Gretchen. A lot of them voted for Abdul as well, which was a very reasonable thing for them to do. But Gretchen got a lot of those votes.
All right. Let's talk about the Trump factor. Brian Kelly said in his concession speech, this is President Trump's Republican Party. So, Matt, let's talk some more about these. Not only Bill Schuette, but Republicans up and down the ticket this fall. Is that a good thing or a liability?
I think that the Republican Party, the Trump Republican Party, if you will, is not as inclusive or open to the independent and more moderate centrists in the GOP. So I think, yes, while it may be Trump's party right now, I do believe that that could have a negative adverse impact on how this goes for Republicans in November if there's not some consideration taken to the large number of women that came out to vote. And these women have been angry and upset since we saw the marches in Washington. We saw women winning both on the Republican side but the Democrat side. But I think that independents, African-Americans, and women that may be set out of the election in 2016 are going to participate in the general election this year. And I think that Trump Republican Party concept may not be the most practical way to go about winning general elections.
So how does Bill Schuette pivot to be more attractive to these independent and moderate voters after being really doubling, tripling down on the president's endorsement for all these months?
It'll be very difficult for him to do so. He's taken some very hard positions, and Republicans tend to have these. This was a really rough primary for Republicans. It got very brutal, and there's a lot of kumbaya that probably needs to start happening today. And you saw a great division in the gubernatorial race between Patrick Kolbeck and all of these guys taking a faction away, right? And Schuette here at the 50 taking the, what I would consider the traditional GOP base. And then you see kind of all the other diversity amongst the party divided up amongst Heintz and Kohlbeck and the others that were there, and Callie to a degree.
All right, Adrian, how would you advise Gretchen Whitmer as you look ahead to November? What should be her main focus areas?
Well, one of the things that you noticed last night, and I think this is something that she needs to repeat, Gretchen Whitmer won all 83 counties in this primary. Is she going to win all 83 counties in the general election? No. But running a broad-based strategy where, yeah, you're going to lose some Republican counties. How much are you going to lose them by? Are you going to lose them by 10 or 15 points, or are you going to lose them by 40 points? Can make all the difference in this election. You need to turn out your voters in Detroit. You need to turn out, you know, your progressive women voters. But ultimately, you need to lose by less in some of these Republican areas while you're turning your base out. So if she can execute again on an 83-county strategy and, you know, take your lumps in Ottawa County, but don't lose it by 40 points, you know, lose it by a smaller margin, and then turn those voters out in those core Democratic constituencies, I think she should prevail.
Which leads me to ask about running mates, because that's part of that. What should each candidate look for in a running mate? And do you have any specific names in mind you think would fit that, Matt?
I'm not sure I have anybody specific in mind, but I think that Bill Schuette needs to look to somebody that maybe appeals to, as I said, the more independent, centrist Republican voters, those folks that are what we categorize as ticket splitters, that can soften some of his more far-right positions that he's taken during this primary and some of the things that he's done as Attorney General in regards to same-sex marriage, other issues that are going to be more relevant in a general.
Well, toss out a couple of the four instances if you think of Michigan Republicans.
I don't believe it'll be Brian Kelly. I think we have a little bit too much problem there. I may look to a female. I may look to one of the senators, Shootmaker. I don't know. I would look for maybe a more middle-of-the-road female.
And over to you, Adrian. What do you think?
As far as the Democratic side, enthusiasm is one of the things that Democrats have really picked up on that they need to be able to rely on. It wasn't there in 2016. They need it to be there in 2018 to capture the governor's mansion. So I think more than, you know, traditionally the Democratic Party would be looking at things like demography, race, geography. I think those things are important. I think the most important thing is somebody that can really energize people and somebody that's willing to do the work. Running for statewide office of any sort is an incredible amount of work. It's sun up to sundown, frankly, probably before sunup till after sundown. And you need somebody who's willing to do that work with a smile on their face and really make that personal connection with voters. You know, for all of the mass communication tactics that folks like myself and Matt engage in, politics hasn't changed that much since the ancient Greeks. If you want something from somebody, up to and including their vote, walk up to them, shake their hand, and ask them for it.
Just because I'm curious, do you have any names? Same question I had for Matt. So anyone on the scene that you think could fit that bill?
I think there are a lot of people that would be great. You know, if you're looking in Southeast Michigan, I really like the idea of Garland Gilchrist. I don't know if he's going to be the pick, but I think that that's somebody that could really connect with some of those core Democratic constituencies. So that's sort of my dark horse that I'd like to see picked, I guess.
All right. Let's talk about the Senate race. Matt, if you were advising John James, West Point grad, Iraq War combat vet, what would you tell him he needs to do to beat Debbie Stabenow?
Distance yourself from the Donald Trump endorsement. Play up your military background. Play up your business background. Speak to women voters. And Debbie's going to be a very difficult candidate to beat. We've seen the Republicans have challenges all the time. And John James needs to go and ask the Republican National Committee for all the assistance financially that he possibly can get. Because we all know that Debbie is a fierce fundraiser. And she's a difficult candidate because she has constituencies in the agricultural industry, which tend to vote Republican. She's done a lot for them. So I would just say that he needs to really play up his credentials in the military, service to country, and really be careful and cautious of how much he uses the Trump endorsement.
Adrian, does Debbie Stabenow have to change anything? Should she worry?
No, I mean, I think Debbie Stabenow is a formidable candidate. She's probably the best retail campaigner in the state. She's an amazing fundraiser, so she needs to continue to do all of those things that have served her so well in prior elections. This is a really, really tough beat. That's why it was so interesting to watch this, you know, pretty nasty Republican primary, particularly towards the end, because this is a long shot.
I want to know what congressional race intrigues you most, Matt.
Unfortunately, probably the Bishop Slotkin race. I think that you saw a tremendous amount of female turnout and interest in her race yesterday. You saw a closing of what traditionally is a much larger Republican voter turnout for Bishop. While he ultimately won, in terms of overall votes cast, it got very close for the 8th Congressional District. And I think I would also look at the 11th Congressional District with the two-female matchup there.
And what's your particular intriguing race, Adrian?
Yeah, I agree with Matt, but in reverse order. The NRCC is terrified of what's going to happen in the 11th Congressional District. If you talk to people in D.C., it shows. They're very, very worried about that. And frankly, I think that they should be. The 8th Congressional District, I think, is a little bit tougher row to hoe. You know, the realignment that's going on in our electorate right now seems to have taken more hold in Metro Detroit suburbs. And, you know, Livingston County is still in that 8th Congressional District. I think that Alyssa Slotkin's got a real chance, but you still have to overcome that Livingston County hurdle. That's a bright red county, and it could very well serve as Congressman Bishop's firewall.
What are you going to most closely watch as we head into the fall, Matt?
I think I'm going to watch what the ballot proposals are going to do to this. I think that we have a large number of very interesting proposals down ticket. That's going to generate a great deal of interest and probably drive turnout, especially with the gerrymandering, cannabis, all of these big-time ballot proposals that are going to draw voters out that may not really even care about the upticket, but some of these issues are very critical to them.
Adrian Heyman, last word. What are you going to watch for?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the ballot proposals, both because of the things Matt just mentioned, also the interaction of outside interest groups that fund campaigns on the ballot side and the candidate side, how they're going to distribute their money. Most of these ballot proposals are coming from the left, and so you'd think that some of these traditional Republican business interests would want to beat some of those back, but they've also got, you know, a state house that they want to hold control of. They want to hold the governor's mansion. They've got state Senate seats to win, and so how do those resources really get allocated between ballot initiatives and the candidates on the ballot?
Democratic strategist Adrian Heyman and GOP strategist Matt Marsden, thanks to both of you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And just to clarify, the Free Press reports that turnout for yesterday's primary broke a record that goes back at least to 1978.